Hello, Woke at Work listeners, Woke
hello,
at
Work hello.
Viewers. Welcome to another episode of Season 2. Blanca, we are out here doing it.
I know. Somebody told me we were doing it. I didn't realize we were doing it. No, I'm kidding. I mean, kind of.
Yes, I mean, we've got here. Two seasons. Like, that's big.
That's huge. Show. I know. Yeah. I know, and every time I leave here learning more and more, every listener, I leave here learning more and more about them. So I'm excited about today. Talk about money, honey. Money.
Yes. We have another podcaster extraordinaire here with us, Tiffany Hawkins of the Momentum Advisors podcast. Literally one of my favorite podcast. I am so excited every Sunday when I know that their episodes come out. And even though, listen, they are on the North Star, Sean and I run the North Star, but that doesn't mean that we have to like really fully engage with all the content. You know what I'm saying? But I engage with the Momentum Advisor show because I genuinely love it. Tiffany and Alan are great together and I learn stuff. Like I'm trying to build wealth too. So in every single Sunday. But Tiffany, I asked her to come on because Blanca, we haven't spoken to a Black woman in the financial sector, right? And we just wanted to add that perspective. So I'm going to read Tiffany's official bio. And I just want to tell y'all, Tiffany is so badass. Her bio was like a page long. And so I had to cut it very short just for this program, but just know that she's out here doing all the things. Okay.
So give it to us.
Official bio. So a socially conscious champion of inclusion and women/minority leadership over the past 6 years in the wealth management sector, Tiffany has maintained a strong focus on socially responsible investing that considers environmental, social, and governance factors. In 2014, Tiffany was recruited as managing director of Momentum Advisors, a New York City-based boutique wealth management firm, where she advanced to serve as the organization's first COO in January of 2020. Throughout her tenure, she has led innovative strategic and cultural changes that have broken the mold of the traditional investment industry to gain national visibility, capture key clients, and grow assets 650%. A multi-unit franchisee, Tiffany has led the launch and turnaround of franchise locations in diverse business sectors, including dry cleaning, fitness, and health. She has independently directed all facets of ground-level startup operations, from construction and team selection to marketing and growth. Tiffany holds dual undergraduate degrees in communication studies and biological research and statistics from Morgan State University in Baltimore, Maryland, and she is a sports and Peloton enthusiast. Welcome to the show, Tiffany.
Wait, thank you for having me. We just going to stop at the Peloton? Are we just not going to add the last part that should be added?
Tiffany got them hands.
She got them hands. Yeah, you just not going to add that she was a boxer. So she'll not only hook your money up, but she'll hook your face up if you come at her wrong. So let's be clear.
Okay. Right? How about that?
Just wanted to make sure that we understood the complexity of this dynamic person who's here. So
listen, this is the first Peloton enthusiast we have on here. So I also have to say shout out to BGM. Okay. You know who you are. I hope you are listening. Shout out BGM Peloton users. So yeah. Tiffany, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited, right? Like one, as you mentioned, I'm already a part of the North Star family. I'm all in on the North Star. So it's good to be a part of another North Star platform.
Yeah.
So Tiffany, we always ask folks to just give us all of your, I know that the bio sort of gave an overview of all of the things you've done, but what are your markers, your identity markers, things that make Tiffany, Tiffany?
So first I'm from New Jersey.
Okay.
Right? And that, I like for everybody to know I'm a Jersey girl for sure, through and through. Pizza, exits off the turnpike, all of those things are important to me. But, you know, things that matter to me that I think are important to note, like I am an HBCU grad. I rep HBCUs extremely hard. I also am a constant learner. Like, I am a person who is always learning everything. I want to learn what you're doing, what I'm doing. I want to learn what's happening around me. And I think that's what really helps me be successful in whatever I'm trying to do. I am a person that I've recently realized I'm not good at knowing how to do a thing. I'm only good at being good at a thing, which means like, I can't just say, oh, that's cool. Like, I've got to read the books. I've got to watch it on YouTube. I've got to train. Like, I've got to be really good at a thing for me to really embrace it. Other than that, like, I am a person who does, I do not take myself very, very seriously. So it's interesting, even hearing Ray read this bio, I'm like, no, nobody cares. Like, nobody cares about those things. Even though I know they matter, but like, I'm, like you said, I could also box. Like, so don't get cute. Like, it could get crazy real fast and none of those accolades will matter. So
okay.
One day you catch me, you know? But that's kind of who I am. I'm a person who's done a lot of things. I am very proud of myself. I'm a person who's been through a lot, so I really like myself. I say that often because I want other people to hear someone say that, like, and know that it's okay to say that because of the things that I've been through and because I'm the person that I am. I'm still standing. I really, really like myself.
Yes. And oh my gosh, I love that. That's so good, Tiffany. I don't think that we've had anybody on the show who, I'm not sure how many people, period, I've heard articulate that, right? Like, I like myself, you know? Like, that's in a society where we're supposed to, you know, be humble.
Be humble.
Like Kendrick said, you know, all that kind of, and you can be humble, but you can still be like, you know what? I look in the mirror and I look at my life and what I've been through and what I've accomplished and I like who has ended up, you know what I'm saying? Who's ended up in front of me in the mirror, who's ended up sitting in this space. So yes, for affirming yourself. Listen, we're already at the affirmation.
I know. That's how we close. We just started. So we can't close out yet. We can't.
Yeah.
But I do think that is an important piece is just to think about, you know, identity markers are also just things that I've come to learn about myself, right? So it's not just like what you see as an external piece, but just also what my journey and what all of these identity components have led me to be in terms of my person, the person I am.
Yeah. And Tiffany, you've worked in, you know, financial services, like we heard in your bio, in a number of different industries. What I didn't read in your bio, but that I just happened to know about you, is that you've even done this work in hip hop. So like from hip hop to dry cleaning businesses, like you have been in this industry. Tell our listeners how you ended up in this sector. Like in your bio, it said that you were a dual major at Morgan State University in communication studies, but then biological research and statistics. Girl, I don't even know what that is.
I know. I'm like, who said, you know what, we should have a major in biological, chemical? Like, I'm like, imbalance is the last word that I thought was going to come.
Yeah, like, I don't know what that is. So how did you end up doing the work that you do now?
So I will say I went into college for biology. I went into college. Somebody in my family thought I was going to be a doctor. I don't know. I've always been naturally good at math and science, but I don't like blood and I'm not very patient. So I don't know where we thought that was going. But I will tell you, I was in my third year. I was supposed to graduate early. And not because I was so passionate. It's because I hated it that much. I just wanted to get it over with. I was in my third year and I was supposed to graduate. And then I just had a come to Jesus moment. Like, I'm not really going to do this. Like, this isn't realistic. And so I took a test that was available on campus and it said that I should switch my major to communication studies. And so that's what I did. And that was really great for me. And so I knew graduating college that I wanted to work in the marketing and strategy space. And so that's where I went directly after college. And honestly, that's where the bulk of my career was spent. And so that is how I ended up eventually working in the entertainment and sports space, because I was working at really large agencies on the influencer marketing and strategy side with clients like Usher, Queen Latifah, Ellen. And then I ended up getting picked up client side. And Puff's team hired me at his internal marketing and strategy team, which at the time was called Blue Flame. And so I worked for Puff as his global account planning director, overseeing all of our relationships with our parent companies, kind of determining how much money we would need for the year, what consumer-facing investments we would do, what will be our return on revenue? What do we got to put out into the market to bring the money back in and then ask for more money next year? And I did that with Puff, and that was like my dream job. Like that was my, like that was my dream job. And once I got it, I was like, this is exactly where I should be. And then a couple of years in, I was like, what the hell? You can't do this anymore. Like this, it's over. It's over. And I will tell you, I had a complete life breakdown, breakdown. And I didn't see it coming. And it happened so abruptly and so aggressively. I oftentimes say one of the worst times in my life is when all my dreams came true. To the letter, like I got my dream job. I had, like, hear this out. So I got my dream job. I was dating my dream guy, the guy that I had wanted to date since I was 10 years old.
Oh my goodness.
Living in my dream apartment, this elaborate apartment in Dumbo. I had just got back from Paris. Me and all my friends, we went to Paris to see Watch the Throne. And I was living like this most fabulous life.
Girl,
and
that sounds fabulous. You went to Paris to do the Watch the Throne.
And I brought all my friends.
I love how that's what stood out. I'm like, ooh, she lived in Dumbo. And she was looking, I know the view.
Watch the Throne is like one of my favorite albums of all time. It really is. So that's so cool for me.
We decided we wanted to be inns in Paris. Like we were like, we are going to actually we're going to hear the song live in Paris. I was 29 years old. And the moment I got back, everything felt wrong. Everything about my entire life and who I was as a person felt wrong. Nothing happened. There was no sudden anything. I just decided, I don't know who I am anymore. In this moment, I don't know who I am or what I'm doing. And I left everything. I moved out of my apartment. I broke up with my boyfriend. I quit my job, all probably within like 8 days.
Wow.
Oh my God.
With no plan.
It was just a feeling. Like you said, nothing happened. Like you didn't get fired. You didn't find out your boyfriend was cheating. You didn't get a bad leak in your apartment. You know, it just was a feeling.
Well, Ray just went all in.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know,
like, you got a leak in the apartment. Listen, you ain't dumb. It's going to be okay.
Had come to Jesus moments in my life, like where everything, I've had a moment where literally everything fell apart, like within the span of a week. But that's because like Sean was getting fired from jobs and, you know, the church was falling apart and stuff like that. But for you, it was just something internal.
Something you knew. And I'm like, it's a hunch, right? I'm sure.
It was heavy. It was so heavy. And, I did all this within 8 days, and I went home to my parents' house, and I was just sitting on the couch, and they were like, what are you doing here? Why are you here? And I said, I don't know. And from that point forward, things in life got really bad. Like, that's when things started to crumble. After I made this decision, other bad things started to happen, and friendships started to change, and people started to pass away, and relationships got really weird. And so I moved to Atlanta. This is my second time moving to Atlanta. I moved to Atlanta because that's where my friends were. And it was just an opportunity to kind of get away from New York City life and New Jersey life. And I just felt like I needed to go underground until I figured it out. And during that time, it was a difficult time, but I had to figure out who I was again. Mm-hmm. And because when you don't have all these things, right? I don't have Paris. I don't have the fly job. I don't have the dope apartment. You don't know who you are. And I really had to figure out who I was again. And I started a company, and I did not want to start a company. It's so funny coming from me. People used to always say, you should be an entrepreneur. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm not. I like direct deposit and HR. I don't be buying people's pay.
Yeah. Yes.
And so I didn't have a choice at this point. I couldn't get a job. I was applying for every job under the sun, and no one would hire me. And I was applying from New York to LA to Chicago, and nobody would hire me. And so I started a company, and I was so embarrassed to be doing this. And I sent an email out to four people. The four people who I knew wouldn't laugh at me. And I said, listen, I started this company. If you know anybody who needs any help, send them my way. Like, that's how defeated I was. I was like, send them my way.
It's like anybody. Yeah.
Right. And they all got back to me immediately. They all started sending me money. I didn't even know how to receive the money at first. And I'm like, what do you... I literally was like, I'm just playing. I was just playing. Like, I'm not a real entrepreneur. Like, you know, but at that point, I was like, no, I really want to spend this money. I would like to spend this money. So I've got to impart this person that you've been working on through this difficult period. And things really started to work out. And still, I had no interest in finance, but Alan Boomer, the founder of Momentum Advisors, ended up becoming a client. He's the best. He ended up reaching out to me and becoming a client, and I didn't know anything about him. And so I did some work for him, and that was it. Like, I did the work and we kind of moved on. We had never met. We only did it over the phone. And then I started to feel confident enough in myself to go home, right? Because I was still in Atlanta. So I said, it's time for me to face these people. It's time for me to face the music. It's time to go home. So I packed up all my stuff and I went home. And my friend who was hired by Alan said, before you even get home, before you even go to your parents' house or anywhere, just come to the office first. And I was like, whatever. And so I went and I meet Alan in person for the first time and we go to lunch. And he's telling me his story about how he started Momentum Advisors, and it sounded pretty similar to my story. And I was intrigued. And so after that, Alan came to me. He said, I know you're an entrepreneur. I know you're coming home for the first time. If you want to work in our office just to have office space, feel free. And me, as I mentioned earlier, I am a learner. So I cannot hear people making money around me and not want to know what you're doing. And so one day he asked me for help on a Momentum client. And I said, so I'll teach you my stuff if you teach me your stuff. And so he was like, well, what does that mean? I said, you have to take interest in what I'm doing. And I will take an interest in what you're doing and we'll only make each other better. I said, so I want to sit in on all your meetings. I want to go to any conference that you're going to, I want to go to. And I was like, you can tell people anything. One thing you will learn, I have no ego, right? So I was like, you can tell them I'm your receptionist. I don't care. I'll carry your bags. It's whatever. Like, I just need to be in the space. I just need to hear what you're hearing. I just need to know what you guys are doing. And that's how our relationship started. And that's how it took a lot of years of dating for me to even consider becoming a part of Momentum Advisors. You know, once we decided, you know, once Alan was like, all right, we've got to make this official. People are seeing you a little bit too much. They think you're a part of this team. And even then I was like, I can only become a part of this team if you allow me to make some major changes. And you allow me to really impart who I am in this firm. And he was really open to it. And that's how I ended up in the financial sector. That's how I ended up at Momentum Advisors. And I've been here now for 7, almost 8 years.
Wow. So what do you think was like, as you were sitting there and learning, and you're like, I want to learn what did you learn? Like, what was one of the key things that you ended up learning from that carrying the bags and dating stage? Like, what is it?
I learned two things, right? The one thing I learned is how to make money, like not how to make money, because I learned how to make money in becoming an entrepreneur, how to create wealth. Is the one thing I learned. And the second thing that I learned is that the financial services industry is not a great industry. And I didn't like it the way that it was. And that's why I said, I will only join Momentum if you allow me to make some major changes, because I don't like how things are done. The education and the information that you guys have is great, but the way you share it and the way you distribute it to people and how you treat your clients is not something that I'm comfortable with.
You know what? I have heard so, Tiffany, I've known you for a few years now, and, you know, I feel like I learned just like a little bit about you at a time, right? Just like if somebody meets me, I'm probably going to tell you my whole life story within the first 15 minutes of us talking, you know? But like with Tiffany, I feel like I learned you bit by bit. And so I've heard some of your story before. I've even listened to you and Alan tell it on the Momentum Advisor show. But I honestly didn't know that that's how you came to be a part of Momentum Advisors. I didn't know that you all worked together in kind of like this unofficial way for so long before working together officially, because when Sean and I met you and Alan, yeah, you must have been officially a part of the team at that point. I think that was just like 4 years ago, maybe something like that. Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, I have turned to Black women for my financial advice for a very long time. You know, I can remember back in like 2004, I was in my house, this house that Sean and I bought, the first house we ever owned, should not have bought it. We didn't even have real jobs. That's back when they were just like giving houses away
mortgages.
Yeah, yeah. Like
that was not in New York, girl. Jobs. That was not in New York. So they weren't giving away nothing.
In Atlanta, girl. We had like the biggest house in the neighborhood on the cul-de-sac. Like we were like babies, 22 years old. Anyways, you can guess how that story ended up. But I was in my house and I was reading this book called Girl, Get Your Money Straight. Okay.
Did you get it straight, Ray? Did you get it straight?
No, I didn't get it straight for many, many years to come. But I have always been kind of financially minded. Like I had that great aunt who, when she died, we found money everywhere, okay? Money all over the house, in the pockets of a fur coat, under the mattress. Like, there was money hiding everywhere. I had this, and my grandmother was very financially astute, you know? Is that the word? Is that right? Okay, yeah. You know, she kept her checkbook, she kept her ledger, she always took care of herself. Like, she was, and so I had this inkling that things were supposed to be a certain way, but I didn't grow up in a house that gave me the skills. And so I started reading and was reading Girl, Get Your Money Straight by Glenda Bridgeport. And, you know, many years later, I found the Budgetnista. I'm sure a lot of our listeners know the Budgetnista. And, you know, so I really want to hear from you, Tiffany, about why you think Black women belong in the financial sector. Like, what's unique about the voice of Black women, the experiences of Black women that make you uniquely positioned to take up space in this particular industry?
I think it's the understanding that Black women have of all different levels of life, right? Like, I think Black women are very great at meeting you where you are. And that's not something that the financial sector is good at, right? Like, you see these Wall Street guys in these suits and they're using all these elaborate terms and they look like they came for money. So I don't want to tell you that I don't got no money. Like, and I think Black women are really great at meeting you where you are and then lifting you up through education and through transparency to where you need to be. I think that to me is why Black women should really be in the financial sector. But it's not easy. Like, you're not welcomed. You're not welcomed. And when you are welcomed, you're welcomed in a very small space. Like, oh my God, you're a Black female financial advisor. When we find some Black women with some money, we're going to send them to you. It's like, no, I'm, and that is very, very common. Like, they will tell you, we want to have Black women in the industry. That's because they want to give you the Black female clients. They don't want to give you any other clients. They don't think you're just great at what you do. They don't want to bring you to the table. They just want to send you to the cookout. And it's
okay. What? Listen. Okay. I'm like that.
And so, but there's room. Black women are extremely intelligent. So that's not a barrier. That's an obvious thing. But there is room, and not just room for you to be here, but room for you to be wildly successful in the space.
Wow.
So you mentioned, you were mentioning too, I think in, you know, one of the things that you learned, I think in the beginning was about just what it means to build wealth. And I just want to make sure, I think we started to have this conversation before, there's income, there's salary, there's wealth. Could you break it down for our listeners? just what's the difference in what is the difference in all those terms?
Absolutely. And I want to break it down for us as individuals, but I also want to break it down so that you know from a corporate structure, right? Like when you hear all these companies like, we make this much money, I make this much money, sometimes it means nothing. Sometimes it means absolutely nothing, right? So salary is the amount that you are paid from your primary job, right? And so that is that with your taxes included, the lump sum number that they pay to you before anybody else gets to touch it. Your income is what you bring home, right? So that's when the IRS gets involved. That's when benefits gets involved and things of that nature. Revenue, which is a number that's thrown around a ton, especially when it comes to corporations and entrepreneurs. They say, I made $1 million in revenue. That is how much money came in before you paid a bill, before you paid a payroll, before anybody ate, before you covered your lease or whatever the case is. And so oftentimes people throw those numbers around like $1 million in revenue. But if you have $2 million in expenses, you're broke, right? Like it didn't work out. It wasn't a good year, right? No one talks about that part, right? Like, and so all of these numbers matter, but all of them mean something very different. And people throw them around. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors. But when you are with yourself, right? I tell people all the time, like when people are like, listen, I'm finally ready to face my finances. I'm finally ready to get myself in order. You know, I'm like, it's going to take a very transparent conversation with you by yourself. And it starts with opening your mail. Open all of your mail.
That's right? A word right there. No, seriously.
Wait, why don't people open their mail? Why is this?
I don't want to see my statements. Yeah, I don't want to see the bills. I don't want to see my statements. I know what I spent. I know it's in the bank. It doesn't really matter. Like they don't want to put the time in. Looking at your statement is like a come to Jesus moment. And you have your online banking, that's one thing. But looking at your statement is something different. And if it still comes in the mail for some people, open it. First of all, look at how many pages it is. That's the start. Like if it's 30 pages, that's a lot of spending that's been happening. And then look at what you've been spending your money on. And it'll tell you, this is how much came in. This is how much went out. Like, this is how much went out in online transactions. This is how much went out in checks, right? And it'll give you a very clear understanding of what your reality is. And it's not something to be ashamed of, but it is ripping the Band-Aid off. That's where it starts. Alan and I always say, the financial revolution will not be televised. It will happen in your bank account. And so you have to get control of what's happening in your bank account. Then the other thing that happens, and it's no knock to anybody else, but the people swear the answer is a budget, right? And that's one of many answers. But the biggest answer to creating wealth is making more money. You are not going to un-Starbucks your way to becoming a millionaire. It's just not going to happen. But you have to make more money.
That's permission to go get your Starbucks. Is that what that was?
It is. It's permission to go get your Starbucks. It is. It really is. You've got to make more money. And
because that's the advice that you get all the time, right? Like if you cut out 3 lattes a week, you're going to save such and such. And then like, but I think that's an important point that you make. Like, okay, you might save some money, but you're not building wealth by withholding your latte.
Correct. You have to make more money. And the thing that we are not taught how to do that is so much easier than people think is just making more money.
Now you say that
to people, I know, right? Like how do people make more money? Right. I mean, I will say, I was a teacher for many years. So like the amount that we get paid is not, you know, it wasn't great, but then every time there were like bumps every year. And then there were times where it was like, hey, can you take on this additional role? And I was at the beginning, I was like, yeah, let me just take on additional roles. And I was like, take on additional roles means take on additional time, and take on additional time means take on additional money. Right. And so I was like, can you pay me for those additional roles? Cause that means that I couldn't get a second job if I wanted to, cause I was too busy taking on a different role. Right. I was trying to make more money. And so this is like, obviously this is like the 24-year-old version of me, you know, trying to work my way through generations of money under mattress. Money in cookie jars, right? Like cutting out cable because I'm like, that's 10, 15, 20, whatever. At that time, it was like $50 a month. And I was like, well, at the end of the year, 50 times 12, I'm like, ooh, what's that going to get me? But I will say, you know, when I first bought property, it was when the market crashed. The biggest impetus for buying that property was location for me. I knew that that neighborhood was going to switch. It was in Brooklyn. And I knew that that neighborhood was going to switch. I was like, it is going to switch. And I probably be ready to sell it by then. And pretty soon when the Starbucks comes up there, I'm going to sell it. That was my theory. It was like, and sure enough, all of that happened. Right. But it was, I definitely think that I operated on this, like, make more money short term didn't seem feasible considering my work schedule where I was at to work from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. But I'm sure there are other ways that we don't think about what making money is.
Girl, you have to listen to the Momentum Advisors show.
I know. I mean, I know.
A shameless plug for the show because no, literally they have episodes. Like I'm about to do some of this stuff. Like I was telling Sean, like we need to buy a vending machine and put it somewhere. And I was telling my daughter, like, you need that car that I got you that I'm paying for, let's have it wrapped. Like, so they really do give very practical ways that you can make more money. And I think it's particularly important for Black and Brown women because, you know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, they come out with their numbers every year and things, you know, on certain factors just aren't really getting better for us. We still make much less than white women, like 83% of what white women make for Black women, and then 75% of what white women make for Latinas. And that a lot of that is, you know, like you said, Blanca, Black and Brown women tend to work in service and product industries. We tend to be the teachers or the secretaries or the grocery store clerks or whatever. And white women, they're working in management. Shout out to affirmative action. That's a whole other conversation about how that happened. But, you know, we are earning less than our white counterparts. So this idea of, you know, you can't Starbucks your way into wealth. You actually have to make more money. I think that's an important concept for Black women. So, Tiffany, I know you have whole episodes about it, but what can you say to our listeners quickly about what are some ways they can make more money?
So the first way to make more money is to take yourself more seriously. You have to take the skills and the resources that you have more seriously, especially Black and Brown women. We are so quick to help out or, you know, y'all know I'm good at something. I'll take care of it. You know, who's going to cater the baby shower? Well, you know, she'll do it because she's such a great cook. Or Blanca, even like you said, if somebody's asking you to do extra work, that means they value the work that you currently do. And so if they're not willing to pay you extra for it, somebody else will. So that doesn't mean quit the job. It means put that service, that skill that you have out in other places, so that they will pay you for it. We are always so quick. Again, people will ask us to, you know, can you help me with this? Because they know that you're good at something. Oftentimes we don't take our skills seriously. We just take it as trying to help out when other people are getting paid for that extra time, right? And so even for the people who work in the service industry, I've been talking about this a lot lately. You know, you're really great at, especially people who have gone to like trade school and they're really great at working on HVAC or plumbing. And so they work for someone else. At some point you've got to say, yeah, well, why would you work for someone else? Like the skill is your hands and your tools, and you can make more money probably in the same amount of time if you just do it for yourself. And entrepreneurship is not for everybody, but when it comes to the number one thing you have to get over to make more money, it is to take your skills more seriously. You're not just, oh, I just happen to also be good at that. There's a reason why you're good at that. There's a way to monetize that. Even for women at their jobs, right? Like people are always asking you for help, pulling you in on projects. That probably means it's time for you to have a new position, or it probably means it's time for you to make more money, because you are valued and you are good at what you're doing. And you need to take that seriously, not just as, well, I'm so helpful and I'm always available. No, that's not what that is. And so people, I think that for me, especially for women, that's the thing. If people can get over, like, so I'm good at all these things, just write down all the things that you're good at, right? Like, whether just things that people ask you to do, people that you, things that you've heard that you're good at, just write a list. And then look, walk away, come back to the list and see, well, I could make money doing this. I could make money doing this. I'm already doing these things. I just don't charge people. You know, someone would probably pay for me to do this. That's like the most basic way to start making extra money.
Can I also insert here the, I'm wearing a shirt that says honor and pay women of color. So I will say, I also think about how many of us ask people to do these things and don't think about paying people to do these things. I'm like, so for listeners out there, as we're tapping into our own, you know, listeners and viewers, as we're tapping into our own, figure out our own list, also pay it forward to those who are giving us their gifts, right? And it's, you know, also I feel like people be trying to nickel and dime you and like, oh, well, how about bargain it? And it's just like, no, this is, you know, I, like, I will say that someone who has worked independently, I'm like, no, this is my rate, right? This is the rate. This is actually what I, this is what I make my money off of. This is the, you know, and I don't need to go quantifying it and all these other things. But at some point I actually did tell people I do charge for the emotional labor of being a woman of color, mm-hmm. to do racial justice workshops. There is something that I walk into in these, that is part of my fee that is about, you know, and so, but those of us who are like sitting there, you know, we know the friends who are doing that. They're the friends we call on to do this. Pull out their money, pull out your Venmo and hook them up. Even if they're like, no, it's on me. Like, no, here you go. Let this be.
Right.
Like, this is how we keep, this is beyond, I think, individual wealth and thinking about like community, right? How do we help and support one another? Right. So I do. Yeah. I mean, I always think about that and how like we call on our friends to do things. And I'm like, well, let me not put them in an awkward situation all the time to tell me that. I'm like, so how much is this? Cause I know this is something you love and also something that I should be paying you for.
Yeah. There are so many women who, you know, your girlfriend does, she does makeup really well, or she knows how to pull your hair together. Yet we know the beauty industry is making billions and billions of dollars, and makeup artists are making, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on set. But you, I'm not that good. I'm not a professional, right? Like, you are a professional. You are, you're not, you might not be number one, but you're on the list, you're ranking, you're taking this seriously, you're buying product, you are watching videos, you might go to a class here or there. The days of required 4-year formal education are not, those days are over. And so we would be, no one, I don't know anybody, I don't know any woman, especially a woman of color, who has asked their hairdresser, what beauty school did you go to? If you could lay these edges the way that I need them laid, mm-hmm. I will pay you whatever you ask me to pay you.
100%, especially when so many of us grew up with our mothers burning the heck out of us with the hot combs. Like, we, right. Like, what credentials am I asking for? My mom had zero credentials, okay? So, yeah, you're right. I just want to know, can you lay these edges? Can you sew in this track and make the track invisible? You know what I'm saying? All that kind of stuff. So that's a really good point. I actually had to get on my daughter about that recently because she has been braiding hair through college. And this is a skill that she taught herself and she happens to be really good at it. And she was braiding her friend's hair for free. And I said, have you lost your mind? I said, absolutely. She's like, oh, well, you know, she's my best friend. I don't care. I don't care. Like, you are spending hours of your day, you know what I'm saying, to braid this girl's hair. If you want to knock off $10 or whatever for a little discount, that's on you, but stop doing hair for free, right?
And if your daughter didn't braid hair, she would go somewhere and pay to get her hair braided.
100% she would.
So pay your people. That's what I'm like. So put the money in your people's pockets. And so,
yes,
yeah.
100%.
So I just wanted to all make right. sure we were all accountable. While it's also like something in ourselves, right, to say, come up with our list, is also another thing in ourselves to be like, well, who am I asking to do these things for free? And why don't I recognize them for their gifts and talents as well? So thank you for that.
Okay. Well, one more thing I want to touch on before we wrap up the interview portion.
Wait, what? We here already? We just started. I know. I'm still not rich. I'm not leaving. Hold on. I still need to get rich. Wait. Is that the last question?
No, but here is a question that I know a lot of women do, you know, struggle with, is this idea of managing your finances with your partner, right? Like, well, I know it's an issue. Like, John and I, we've been through it because I have, first of all, I am the spender in the house, but that's because I buy for everybody in the house. I make sure everybody's needs are met. But
girl, you need to charge them to be their personal shopper.
Listen, okay? That's what I need to start doing. But he is the one who will spend more impulsively, right? Like, he will just, you know, show up with something or pay something. And I'm like, what? I'm like looking through stuff and I'm like, what is this? What is this thing that you have bought, you have spent money on, yada, yada, yada. And so, like, I also grew up with a very old school grandmother. She and my grandfather were married to each other. They never got a divorce, but they also never lived together. Like, the whole time that I was coming up, they never lived together. He had his house, she had her house, she had her finances, he had his finances. She would do his taxes for him, all that kind of stuff. But my grandmother, she was just like, I'm gonna make sure I'm good. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna make sure that I'm set. And so for me, it's like, Sean and I don't do the my money, his money kind of thing. Like, it's all our money. But then I have some other girlfriends who are just like, nah, sis. Like, Block, are you laughing?
Yes.
Of the spectrum are you on? Okay.
We know which side I'm on because we just had this conversation.
I know, but
I will say I'm on the other spectrum where I grew up as the only girl. This I think is part of, you know, when you think about how you grew up and just messaging too. I grew up on the other side of the spectrum where I grew up. My mother was like, as the only girl and the youngest girl, and I have four older brothers. It was like, well, you know, this is how life is going to go for you. You're going to go to school. You're going to graduate. You're going to make money. You're going to buy a house. Then you're going to get married and then you have your children. She was like, that's the way to go. And I was like, I don't know about all of that, but I'm definitely going to make my own money and it'll be my own money. And I didn't get married until later on. So I had lived an independent life for most of it. And to this day, we're good. We're actually good with, like, you know, independent accounts, and we have a joint, and then we, you know, like, here's, I'll spend this and you spend that. And then, like, there are certain big ticket purchase items. But if he want to go buy a car for his money, cool. Just make sure that your bills are paid. If I want to go buy a car for my money, cool. Right. And then we have collective, like, spendings for family trips. When we were taking trips every year, we would do, you know, we work hard, we play hard. So we did family trips. But it's definitely independent and then come together as we need to for certain things. And that's, and it's, wow. It works for us. Everyone is like, what? Y'all don't have a joint bank account? I'm like, no. Does he know how much you make? No. Like, I mean,
what?
Just get the
pill. He doesn't know how much you make?
No. I mean, I'll tell him.
That's hilarious.
Tiffany about to be like, well, ladies, let me tell you how y'all both need to learn and grow right now.
What's your advice for us, Tiffany? Like, we are on complete opposite ends of the spectrum. Blanca, I am dead. If you tell your husband how much you make.
No.
Oh, my God. That is so funny.
I don't think he knows how old I am either. So there. But he got to know my shoe size and my clothing size to give me the right clothing and shoes, and he's going to buy me gifts.
That is hilarious. Tiffany, where are you on this spectrum?
So personally, I am a bit more Blanca. I'm not full Blanca, right? But I'm a bit more Blanca. And I am single, but I've been married. And I remember the first time he was my fiance at the time. He was like, so we should sit down and talk about money. And I was like, I didn't ask you for any money. And he was like,
thank you.
He was like, that's not what I mean. And so my father only has daughters. And so he has always raised us that I'm the only man that you need. Like, you can have whatever man you want to have, but I'm the only man that you need. And I want you to always take care of your own finances. I do believe across the board, wherever you fall on the spectrum, you do need to know how to manage your own finances as an individual. Whether you join all your assets together, that's great. But you do need to first know how to manage your own finances and understand something. What's your money mind, right? Understand your own money mind. There's like a happiness money mind where it's like, listen, if it's going to make me happy, I need to spend it. There's a protection money mind, who is the person who's always like, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I need to make sure the money's always there. just understanding yourself. It's a part of becoming an adult. It's just understanding what you think about money. Does the thought of, like, are you scarce with money? Are you, you know, afraid that you're not going to have it one day? Are you one of these people like, listen, it's going to come one way or the other? But regardless of whether you are comfortable sharing your assets or not comfortable sharing your assets, you do need to figure out your own money mind and just identify what money means to you, wherever that came from. Now, I am a person who believes that everybody should have their own bank account. Even if you have a joint bank account and most of your money goes into the joint bank account, there needs to be some sort of separate money just in case of an emergency, right? You just never know what's going to happen. And so some money should be, it's like people have multiple bank accounts, right? Why wouldn't you have one bank account that just has your name on it? It's not necessarily to be hiding and stealing or cheating, but I do believe individuals should have their own bank account where they do what they will. Now, me personally, even when I was married, we had a joint bank account and we both contributed by percentage of our income. So you can't say, well, I'm gonna put in this much a month and you put in this much a month. We might not make the same amount of money and that might not be fair. So we pick a percentage. I'm gonna put in 50 or 60% of my income. You put in 50 or 60% of your income. That allows for fairness, and the rest can go wherever each individual chooses for it to go, into their own bank account, into whatever the case is. We did it that way because I am a person, this may feel petty, I don't want to pay for my own gifts. If you are buying me something, it shouldn't come out of our joint bank account. It comes out of your
bank
account.
That's not petty. That's not petty, girl.
On my gifts. And if I want to do something nice for you, I don't want you paying for it. Right. And I also, if I want to go get my nails done and get extra crystals next week, I don't want to have to explain why my manicure costs $30 more this week. There's just a sense of independence as an individual to sometimes be able to do and spend as you choose on the things that matter to you without having to require explanation. And so for me, that's why we can have a joint account, but I need to have an individual bank account that's my business that I can buy gifts with, I can get my nails done with, whatever the case is. And I think that's still the case even for stay-at-home moms who don't necessarily have an outside job. Yeah. I think you should also have a separate account, even if your spouse is funding that account, for you to be able to feel like an adult, to do things that you want to do without having to ask somebody, you know, just small things, without having to say, hey, is it okay if I, you know, again, get my hair done extra special this week, you know, because I'm going to be taking more money out of the account. Like, as an adult, you have to feel like you can make decisions on your own, just small things that just make you feel good about you as a person.
Wow. And I do think that does bring up some gendered pieces too, of like, what does it mean to coexist? And this is obviously in any, you know, in relationships that have been traditionally, you know, male, female, but just what does it look like to like reclaim some power, right? Sort of. I have a son and a daughter and they have separate bank accounts. They don't access it right now. Like they don't, but they also have their own money that like people, you know, they'll see my mother and she slips them $5. My friend would be like, you know, whatever, their play aunties like slip the money. And so it has come to a point where they're like, I want this. And I'm like, that's some extra stuff that as a parent, I'm not paying for. You want to hand me your $5, I'll put it on my, you know, I'll debit it from mine, but that's your money, right? Mm-hmm. So like, that is your money. And they're like, well, I'm responsible for feeding you. I'm responsible for all these. And you have gifts. Like, it's not like you don't have a Nintendo Switch. Like, you want these extra things. Extra things cost money, right? And so
I find so funny is the way that when that happens, because I do the same thing with my kids, right? We'll be at Target and I'll be like, can I get? And I'm like, oh, sure, it's your money. What's so funny to me is the way they reevaluate whether or not they actually want that thing when they have to spend their own money. Okay.
And it's less about like, and you know, like I've gone back and forth and people are like, oh, they're your kids. And I'm like, they're not starving. They got clothes. Like, it's not like they not. And you know, like sometimes I go and I'm like, okay, you have $15 to spend, figure out what you're going to spend, which is an interesting exercise to do with a 5 and 6, like when they were really young, to do it with little kids. Cause they were like, quantity, right? So someone, my daughter would be like, you know, like more things for less money. or do you get the one ticket item? So it's not any different than being adult. And so it is, you know, I think often about how do you become, you know, I'm off as a teacher, just thinking about how do you create critical thinkers? And so like, you know, how do we think about our own money and how we can spend our own money? If you are a stay at home mom, all those favors you'd be doing for other people, how do you go in back to what you said, Tiffany, how do you start getting money for some of those things? That's your money, right? Like I don't, that can go into my account, that can go into my whatever mattress fund, whatever it is. Like I, you know, and so I do think there's a lot there about just reevaluating our income stream and our, just reevaluating our income stream. So, which makes me think about our wow story, which we have coming up. We're gonna help out a listener when we come right back. So, wow story. What is your wow story? What is my wow story? What is your wow story? What is your wow story? My wow story. What is your wow story? Wow story. Wow story. What is your wow story? So we're just curious to hear. We ask our guests, you know, to just share a wow story. Is it something that happened? You're like, wow, did that really happen to me? So bless us with something. Is it about boxing, punching somebody's face out? You know, something, I don't know.
I know you got to have some wow stories about working with Puff. And for people who are listening who don't know who Puff is, that what are some of his other names? P. Diddy, I think he's going by Love Puff Now. Daddy,
he's Love Now.
Sean Combs, you know, all that.
So I will give two quick wow stories about working for Puff, right? And just how they have shaped the person who I am today. So one of them, you know, like my first week, and I had come from like a very prestigious corporate job. I had worked at this very prestigious agency. I was really feeling myself like, you know, I am prepared. I am going to kill this job. And I remember my first week, he came into my office. He happened to be in the office that day. He stopped in my office and, you know, just made a real introduction and said, you know, I just want to give you some advice. He said, you know, I've seen your resume. Seems like you're really qualified. And he was like, so, you know, love that very much. He said, but the one thing you don't know how to do and you need to figure it out, and it's the one advantage that everybody else in here has over you, is you don't know how to work for Puff Daddy. Like you know how to do a general job, but you don't know how to work for Puff Daddy. And he was like,
wait, did everybody he refer himself in the third person for real?
Of course. I don't think you guys doubt that. And at the time I was like, you know, I don't know what that means. He was like, everybody else in here knows how to work for Puff Daddy and you need to figure that out. And that's what's going to make you successful here. And I was just as confused as you guys were. I'm like, listen, I've got my spreadsheets. I've got my color coded post-its. I've got this. I'm ready to kill this. And it didn't take long for me to figure out what that meant. And that meant, like, as smart as you are, you need to know your environment and you need to know what's required of you in your specific environment. Mm. And it was very different from what was required for me in other environments, right? And so what that meant is our meetings don't look like their meetings. A Puff Daddy meeting has a fragrance. There's floral arrangements. sometimes there's sometimes there's a bar set up. It needs to feel like very beautiful. You need to look good. You can't show up in a Puff Daddy meeting necessarily, not a real meeting, just looking like whatever. It's a problem. You're like, and these things are specific to that situation, and that's not what other people are dealing with. But what I took away from that is that you need to always know, you need to be able to provide what the environment requires. Everybody doesn't require the same amount of information. Everybody doesn't require the same amount of small talk. Everybody's not comfortable with everything. And that is what will make you successful at the end of the day. Like I said, education and information, that's the low barrier to get into the room. How to excel in your specific environment is what will make you great, and determining which environments work for you and which don't. Because somebody else would have said, yeah, I wouldn't have been able to do that. I wouldn't have wanted to be there. And that's great. But if you were there, then you would have need to identify that very quickly. Like, this isn't for me, or I've got to find the spaces that work for me. The other thing is that my very first week working for Puff, We put together one of the biggest Ciroc advertising campaigns in history. And it was called the Luck Be a Lady spot. It was shot in Vegas. There were like 14 celebrities who weren't even aware that we had cast them in our minds for the shoot that was happening in 2 weeks in Las Vegas. And they all needed to be there. And we needed to have licensing rights and producers and directors and all these things. And I just said, when I was made aware, that's not possible. And everybody just kind of looked at me and walked away. And I did not learn that in Puff Daddy's world, it's all possible. There's no thought in his mind that it's not possible. There's no thought, right? You can't do it, and that's fine, but it's not impossible. And I never paid attention to it, but it wasn't until like being in the role for more months and more months that I realized that every time I said something was impossible, we ended up doing it. And that is when I realized that it's all possible. You might not have the right people in play. Yeah. You might not be willing to go that far. You might not be able to lose all that sleep. But if you are, it is possible. It has essentially ruined me to this day because I work this way with other people. I say things to people all the time. And I'm like, yeah, so this has to happen. And they're like, yeah, there's no time. There's whatever. And there's just no... It never crosses my mind that it's not possible. Like and it always happens. Every single time it happens. And he's imparted that in me. He's imparted that in probably most people who have worked with him, which is why we probably seem a little disturbed. But it's going to work out the way that I want it to work out. Maybe not. It might not happen the way that I want to happen, but it's possible. And it's going to happen. It just comes down to what I am willing to put in and who I'm willing to bring into the equation to get it done. I don't know if those are wow stories, but those are wow defining moments.
No, I think that's really important. I mean, the wow part was him coming in and saying, you don't know how to work for Puff Daddy. No, that was hilarious. But those you share really important, I think, insights. And I recognize, you know, my husband in that anything is possible kind of thing. I mean, that is how he operates 100%, you know, and it can drive people crazy.
Sean is also, I'm not saying he's Puff Daddy, but I'm saying you also have to know how to work for Sean. It's 100%. Not like working for anybody else. It's not, you could wake up in the morning and open social media and think that the world's blowing up if you work for Sean. And then you have to recognize that he's not even, he's drinking water. He didn't pay it any mind. Like, there is something to also be said about knowing how to be a part of the North Star family, about how to work for Sean. And that just comes with everybody. It's not just a Puff Daddy thing. And Sean's probably best team members and partners are the people who just accept him for who he is and know how to work for him specifically.
Yep, you're right. And that's been my life work.
I'm telling people
as his wife for the past 20 years.
Right. I'm going to my family after this. Y'all got to learn how to work with me. Y'all don't know me. You must not know about me.
Okay, how about that?
I'm about to use that line. Great.
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of what we said is really going to be great for our listener who wrote in with a question about how to advocate for herself. And so we'll get to that in just a minute. We got a letter from a listener. Okay, so, you know, Tiffany, you've said a lot of important things about, you know, knowing your worth, knowing yourself, and charging basically for the work that you do. And I think that should be helpful for our listener. Our letter today comes from Amber in North Carolina. And Amber says, I have been at my company for 5 years and want to have a conversation with my boss about a raise. I've gotten the regular 2% raise each year, but since joining the company, I've earned my bachelor's degree, shout out to you, Amber, and have taken on more responsibilities in the office. COVID seems like a bad time to ask for a raise, and part of me thinks I should just be grateful to even have a job right now. but I'd like to buy a house soon and have some student loans to pay off, so I really need to be paid more. Should I take the leap and ask for a raise, or should I maybe wait until next year? If I should ask, how do I go about doing this? Okay. What are our thoughts for Amber in North Carolina?
So, I love this. I love this for a variety of reasons. So I own a number of franchises, right? So like I have like 125 employees on payroll. And I will tell you, the one thing that Alan and I always laugh at when we find new hires and we do the interview process and we give them the salary, no one ever negotiates. It's never happened. No one ever negotiates. And we laugh every time, like, why, you know, I know this number isn't great. Like, why does it, you know, no one ever pushes back. And I guarantee you, if in any of these cases people would have pushed back, we would have paid it.
Like, wow. You know,
it's mind-boggling to me. And again, it goes back to taking yourself more seriously. But you can't take yourself seriously from, like, there has to be some metrics involved in you taking yourself seriously. So specifically to Amber, you've already identified that you're taking on more responsibilities. Write those responsibilities down. Write down the responsibilities you started with versus the responsibilities that you have now. You are a college graduate now. You have a bachelor's degree now, right? So that automatically quantifies you for easily several tens of thousands of dollars more. I will tell you just another quick story. I recently just had somebody ask me for a raise in COVID. It was less than 2 weeks ago. And she said the same exact thing. I don't know if I should be asking you for this in COVID, but I work really hard. I've been with you for a very long time. And it would be easier for me if I made more money. And my immediate response was, why did it take you so long to ask me that? Like, I have no problem. And not only did I give her what she asked for, but I doubled it. Now, your boss isn't going to do that, Amber. So they're not going to freely double it. But I will tell you that what will happen is jobs only work based on the employees that they have, right? So you are a value to that job. I absolutely think you should ask for the raise, even if you don't get it right now. And that has happened where I've said, I cannot give it to you right now, but I can give it to you in 3 months, right? Even if you don't get it right now, it has to be on their radar that you are aware of the responsibilities that you've taken on and how you've bettered yourself and allowed them the opportunity to rise to the occasion. You cannot take away people's opportunity to do right by you. You have to give everybody the opportunity to do right by you. And if they say no, you also need to know what they truly think of you. You also need to know where you really stand. And that will either empower you to look elsewhere or help you redefine what your role is going to be here. You could easily then say, well, understood. And you say this to yourself, understood, you're not going to give me this money. But then I have to understand I can't keep giving you all of this extra time. And maybe that extra time that I'm giving to you needs to go towards me making money in other ways. Mm-hmm. But we shouldn't run away from our reality. We need to know what our employers think about us, if they're willing to rise to the occasion for us. And if they're not, we need to know that also. It's absolutely time for you to ask for your raise, but please go into that conversation understanding what you bring to this table now versus what you brought to the table then, and be completely prepared for whatever the response is and just use it as fuel.
Yes. We actually had a very similar question a couple of episodes ago where someone, I don't remember what it was, if they were wanting a raise, but something that they needed to go to their boss about. And we talked about that very thing, like being prepared for whatever the answer is, right? Like when you are negotiating, don't say, oh, well, give me a raise or I'm gonna walk away, if you're not actually prepared to walk away, right?
Right.
So have to be prepared for whatever the response is and play those scenarios out. Well, if they say this, what will my response be? Well, if they come back with this, what will my response be? So that you really are prepared and you're not putting things out there on the table that you don't mean. I love what you said about negotiating. I learned a long time ago about, you know, when you get a job and And I don't know what it is, something about, I feel like, the Black psyche in particular, that just, we've been taught that we should be grateful. You know what I'm saying? Grateful to be employed, grateful to have this position, grateful to be in this space. And we just accept that. And I learned a long time ago about negotiating. And sometimes it's not even always about money, right? And so whenever I'm job hunting now. If you follow me on Instagram, you know, I'm looking for a particular kind of position. So I put it out there on Instagram just to get from people, like, what kinds of organizations are out there? Right. What kind of positions are out there that I don't even know about? And I've learned so much, honestly. And I learned some of y'all out here getting paid for stuff that I didn't.
Very, very much so.
Right? I was like, wait, what? That job pays
money.
Yeah.
It's not just money. Just like you said, right? I will tell you, the first time I negotiated a job, and I was really just shooting from the hip. I didn't have a job. I hadn't had a job in a while. So I was like, I'll just keep not having a job. It really doesn't matter if this doesn't work out. And I negotiated more money for myself, but I negotiated more days off. I wanted, like, to be able to work from home one day a week. This is way, way before COVID. I was like, I need every Thursday off. I need a new computer upgrade every 3 years. I see that everybody's working on PCs. I prefer a Mac. I need you to buy me a separate cell phone so that, like, I was making stuff up. I literally was like, whatever. Like, if it doesn't work out, I'm going to go right back home. But negotiating is not just about money. It's about quality of life. And I really hope that in these, I guess, I hope we're near post-COVID, or, you know, I really hope that COVID has taught us about quality of life. And negotiating, money is not the only thing that's going to make your life feel better. There has to be some flexibility in who you are. Do you need to be able to leave work every day by 5? Do you need to make sure, you know, do you have kids who play a sport and you want to say, listen, every Thursday, I need to be out of here by 4 o'clock, no matter what, but because we've got a game or a practice or something. When you negotiate, it's about you. It's not just about money. And think about all those things. And to your point, right, and as I mentioned earlier, you've got to be prepared for the response, right? They might say, I'm not willing to do that, but I'm willing to do some of these things. And mm-hmm. Or they might say, we will absolutely, if you do these things over the next 3 months, we'll absolutely do those things. But you have to be your own ally. And to Ray's point, we're always just so grateful. Thank you so much for having me. Like, you know, there is something to be said about them having you also. And right, that matters.
Right. Yeah. And it does. What you're bringing up, and I know we're trying to figure out how to close it. I was like, this is the conversation that I don't want everyone to end. I think the other thing that I've thought about too is, as a working mother, how I felt bad. I don't want to be seen less than, as a woman of color who's a mother, right? I'm a woman. What I don't want to do is make it look like I need to have these stipulations for all of these other things in my life, right? Me having a kid should not reduce my effectiveness. And therefore me asking for time off is seen as like me trying to skirt the job, right? And so that was my own personal unlearning that, you know, like, no, it is a fact of my life, right? That I had to, like, I got to be in multiple places, right? And so I can't kill myself doing this. Instead, some of these hours that y'all have me sitting up in an office doing stuff that I don't really need to be here doing, I can do this from home, you know? And I think COVID has actually taught us that, right? For some months, like, we should workplaces should actually reevaluate this concept of working from home. But it did make, I think that was my own growth, you know, like, just thinking about that. And then, the other thing that I was just thinking about is how many times that identity marker for us has also pushed us to take on additional roles, because if I'm not at the table, then who is? If I'm not the voice at the table, then who is? And then we're sitting there stretched thin, doing all of these committees, doing all of these extra jobs. And, exactly. And then we have our own roles and responsibilities that we're doing late at night, or doing, you know, and maybe not doing to the effectiveness that we would normally want to, because we're too busy wanting to be at the table. And so asking for money to be a representative at these tables, like, because y'all didn't hire more folks of color in this senior level position, somehow my role has to be at these places to make sure this representation happens, or this point of view is there. And so y'all should be paying me this extra money that you have me sitting in this committee for. And yeah, so
I think you bring up a really important point, Blanca, about the, you know, asking for more as women, as mothers. Like, I'm all about right now forcing this country to do better by working mothers, right? And if I have to do it one organization, one company at a time, like, that is the hill that I am willing to die on. Like, I'm not going to hide the fact that I'm a mother, that I have responsibilities, that I want to be around to raise my children, but I'm also going to bring value to your organization. Like, I'm going to work hard, I'm going to meet my metrics, I'm going to do whatever I need to do, but I'm not shying away from the fact that I care to go to my kids' soccer game. I care to be able to go to their performance every now and then that they put in the middle of the day. You know what I'm saying? And I don't want to be breaking my neck to do it. And I don't want to work for a place that doesn't understand that. You know what I'm saying? And so, no, I put that out there on the table. I think that mothers, this is a whole other thing about working mothers and what we bring to an organization. I just had an interview with somebody and they were asking me about my project management skills. And I was like, let me tell you something. I have raised 5 children, you know, in 3 different states who have all done Girl Scouts and this and that and have this need and that need. Like, you want to talk about project management? Let's talk about motherhood and what that taught me in terms of those skills. But anyways, like I said,
that's so I do want to add this other thing for any listeners out there. I often talk about the gift of bilingualism. I speak another language. That is an asset, right? Mm-hmm. And then I've seen people pay to learn how to speak another language. Yeah. And yet those of us who it is our native language are expected to do this mm-hmm. and like sometimes pulled away from our jobs to translate for something or to translate this document. Give me, if that is not my role, right? Like, I think about when I'm in schools, there are certain times where I was like, okay, if you have to communicate to families at the front office, that is actually part of the role, right? Let's bake that into the cost that you actually have that as an additional skill, or that's factored in. But if I'm pulling a classroom teacher to translate for another classroom, I done stopped you from your job to go help. No. That's more money, right? And so that is my new kick. That's one. Two, the other advocacy, Tiffany, that you mentioned, as I was moving to entrepreneurship, whatever that was, and I was scared to let go of a, because I was very calculated. I needed my 15th and first. I needed to know. One of the things that I did negotiate was a reduced salary and therefore reduce responsibilities for 4 days so that I can start launching my day off to actually work on my own skill, right? Like to work on the other thing, my side project, which would eventually, and that's for those of us who have this trepidation of jumping all in, right? Is like, how do you not kill yourself by trying to do a full job on 5 days a week and a side job, but how do you, you know, negotiate that if you can into your own, you know, into your contract as you're signing on. So,
yeah, that's a good idea. Tiffany.
I know. I don't want to leave.
We could talk to you forever and ever about all the things. Like, we love all our guests, but sometimes we have a guest that, you know, just the conversation is really good and there's so much ground to cover that we feel like, you know, over an hour is not even enough time. But, one last thing we're going to ask of you, because you've dropped so many gems already. But one more thing we're going to ask of you when we come back is for our affirmation. What of everything you said do you want to leave our listeners with when we come back?
Affirmation.
Okay, Tiffany, thank you mm-hmm. so much for being our guest. We're going to let you have the final word. So what do you want to leave with our listeners?
So I have to leave two things. One's personal, one's finance focused. I know we talked earlier about liking yourself, but I like to tell people to prepare yourself. Like, prepare yourself for whatever it is that you want in life. You don't need to know how it's going to happen. I will tell you, when I was in a very, very dark season and I did not know how I was going to come out of it, all of a sudden, randomly, I started eating really healthy and I started working out a lot. And somebody was like, well, why, of all the things, like, why are you doing that? I said, because when I come out of this, I need to look good and I need to feel good. I need to be able to hit the ground running. I don't want to deal with any insecurities. I don't want to be like, well, wait, let me go and, you know, prepare yourself for whatever it is that you want to happen so that the moment that it happens, you are ready in that moment. You don't got to run back to the car. You don't got to wait. Let me go do this first. Let me go hire. So prepare. It's going to happen if you're willing to put the effort in. Please, please prepare for it. And that also is a big part of liking who you are. Please do not be afraid to like who you are, especially when you're a woman of color. Like, we're just expected to just be humble and so considerate and you have to like who you are in order for this to work out, because even coming into the financial services industry, where it's nothing but a bunch of white men, it would have been very easy for them to impact my confidence and shake who I was to make me think I needed to be something different. And at no point was that on the table. That was never an option. Mm-hmm. I came in the door saying, so I'm only coming in the door if you let me change everything. So... and a lot of that came with liking who I was and knowing what I brought to the table. Financially, I don't know if it's an affirmation, but we need to get it. Money is not just for spending. Put that money to work for you. That is how wealth is created. That's, everybody's not going to come up with a Facebook. It's only so many more TikToks we can do. If you understand Dogecoin, that's great. That's not how we create generational wealth for our family in mass. The one way, the very one way, is to put your money to work for you so that it works for you while you're sleeping. And I really do mean that. I make money in my sleep every single night. White people make money in their sleep every single night. And that's your teacher up the street. I'm not talking about the affluent white lady in Madison Park. I'm talking about your child's English teacher. She and her family are making money. They're putting their money to work every night. Their money is making money for them in their sleep. It requires two things. It requires you to invest, and it requires you to leave it alone. That is the magic sauce that all these people have been doing all these different years. And if I were throwing a little extra, it's to have some health insurance, to have some life insurance. But please, mm-hmm. learn. And if you can listen to Momentum Advisors, it's free. We make it very plain. We have a show called Where the Money Resides. We are specifically talking about how to make your money work for you. Stop putting yourself to work and put your money to work. That is how wealth will be created. That is how your life will be easier. That is how your children's lives will be easier financially. We have to embrace it for ourselves. You cannot, there's only a certain number of hours a day. It is very hard to work yourself into wealth. People can do it, but everybody cannot. Most people cannot. They are not relying, the wealthy are not relying on that 40 hours a week. I promise you. They could care mm-hmm. less about that 40 hours a week. Mm-hmm. They know that they've put their money in a place that is working for them, no matter what happens at work, no matter if they get a raise, don't get a raise. They're going to be fine regardless. That is the one thing, that is the one piece of peace that women of color don't have. And we need to impart that for ourselves. Money is not just for spending. Put that money to work. And it is easier mm-hmm. than you think.
Thank you so much, Tiffany. Where can people follow? What are your all the handles? What are all the things?
So I will tell you, my personal handles on Twitter and Instagram are at T.I. Hawkins. These are not, I am not saying professional things on these platforms.
So that's the one I'm going to go to. Yes, that's the one everybody's going to.
If you want to see me on vacation and talking to people crazy, that's what happens there. But if you go to @MomentumAdvice, and that's on Twitter and Instagram, @MomentumAdvice, that's where we talk about the podcast. That's where we tweet out the shows. That's where we're giving out the tips. We're giving out the links. We're giving out the resources. All this stuff is free. We don't require anything of you. You don't have to pay for a pamphlet or download a single thing. Just listen. Just listen. Sometimes share. There are other people in your life who need this information also. And mm-hmm. then if you want to do anything for us ever, leave a review. But for us, I just want to see more people who look like us doing well and being at peace in their finances. That's what this is all about for us. So at Momentum Advice on Twitter and on Instagram. And if you want to see me just doing hood rat things with my friends and going on trips, that's at T.I. Hawkins on Instagram and a little bit on Twitter.
All right.
Thank you so much, Tiffany.
Thank you, Tiffany.
Thank you, guys. This was really great. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You have no idea. We all about to go make our money work while we sleeping. So thank you.
Take care.
All righty.
All right, guys. Have a great
day. Bye.
Let us make time for reflections. Reflections. Reflections.
Girl. That was so good. I was like, are we done?
I know. It was really, really good. I love thinking about, you know, ways to get better and more financially, you know, financially smarter. I told you, I listen to their podcast every single Sunday. While I'm cooking Sunday dinner, they're playing because they're really good. We met them because we were looking for financial advisors for ourselves personally, and they were referred to me by a friend, and, you know, they helped manage the North Stars affairs, and they're just really good, smart people. So what are you taking away from the conversation? I feel like there's so much.
There was, I mean, there's like, I think she kept separating things from like personal and, you know, financial. And so I will say that on the personal front, it was, you know, as I thought about the, I like me, just on life front, and I wrote this down at some point, the boldness to make decisions aligned with her spirit just stood out. Right. And so whether it was the 8 days, whether it was assessing how to work for Puffy after he said what he said, just the importance of aligning stuff with your spirit. And like, you know, she's like, I don't care. I'll carry a bag if I need to. Right. Like my whole goal in life is to learn. And so those were her boundaries, her parameters. And so that stood out to me. And I've just been thinking a lot about just making money work for you, you know, like, you know, it is the secret that I feel like our people don't, you know, we're oftentimes, we hustle hard. That's not, there's never any question. That's why when we talk about working hard, that's not a question that we work hard. Everything just seems so immediate. It's about working hard so that I can get this now, tomorrow, and not in years to come. And so I've for years been thinking about, you know, how do you do that in a way, you know, how do you make that money? So it's not about me anymore. It's about after me. Right. And so.
Yeah, that's so true.
What about you? You got notes? I see.
I do. I jotted down a couple of things that really stood out to me. First, when she talked about how when you are in predominantly white spaces as a Black woman, people don't want to give you a seat at the table. They want to send you to the cookout. That was a whole word right there.
You did respond to that.
I love that idea because they want to treat you like you're here for the Black people, or, you know, you're here to tell them how to speak to the Latinx community. You know, that's why you're here. It's like, well, actually, I have some thoughts about how to advertise to everybody. You know, I can manage anybody's money. Money's green. You know, what are we talking about? Don't just send me your Black, like, send me your Black clients. Yeah, you know, but don't put me over there on a shelf over here, or as she said, don't send me to the cookout. I want to see at the entire table. I'll tell you some things about the cookout. That's the only place where I belong. I thought that was really powerful. And then the other thing she said was give everyone the opportunity to do right by you. What? That was so good to me. I was like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if this is what you know you need, if this is what you know you deserve, if this is what you know that you're worth, give them the opportunity to give that to you, right? Instead of just accepting what it is that they're offering. So I love that. I really love that. There was a lot of good stuff in this conversation.
Yeah, so much. And I'm just, And I oftentimes think about the people who, what is, you know, when I was a principal, how people would come to me and be like, you know, I want a raise. And I'm like, okay, tell me why. There were like people like, I need to make more money. There were some of those people, and they're like, so is there anything I can do to make more money? Right. Like there's that. And then there were the other people who were like, I'm doing these additional jobs, and hopefully, you know, I was acknowledging it, but for those who I wasn't, you know, that they would come and advocate. And I just hope that, you know, as we're thinking about, and my immediate reaction sometimes would be like, child, do you know when I was your age, I was working and I figured it out and it was just part of, nobody was paying me. And then I had to put, you know, like we put that aside, but like how do we both pick up the mirror and also do the work, right? So that's also something I'm walking away here thinking about, right? When she's like, you know, get paid for your skills, we should also be paying people for their skills.
100%.
Hope everyone was able to take away their own little nuggets from this. And yeah, it was
Let us know in the comments, you know, come back. Like we always advertise the show, but come back, you know, into the comments and tell us what stood out to you. What are you reflecting on as a result of these episodes? We love to hear from you. And
what you might be doing differently, right? Like some people might be like, you know what? Tomorrow, that's it. I'm going to go do this.
I'm about to go open up my own bank account. How about that? And when I get this new job and Sean's like, how much you make? I'd be like, it's none of your business.
I mean, we going to talk offline about that. He know the shade. This is the range. So,
all right.
Okay. So you're going to be coming to stay in my house, be like, listen, you done caused problems. Right. You better go to Tiffany house. That was not me. Listen, Sean, if you listening, that was not me. All right, y'all.
Thank y'all.
Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.